All right. More exciting information we could not live without. In 1944, some of the top hits were Tooraloo Ralu Ra. Would You Like to Swing on a Star by Bing Crosby? Yeah. The Trolley Song by Judy Garland. Some of the top grossing movies that year were Going My Way, okay, National Velvet, and Meet Me in St. Louis.
Cool.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Next agenda item is an important one. It's the National Federation of the Blind of South Carolina celebrating 75 years of service to the blind. Panel discussion. Do we have marshals and stuff ready to go now? Okay. You know, okay, let's play the walk up first and then we.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down a road and back again. Your heart is true, you're a pal and a confidant.
Marshall and Lois Tucker, well, Marshall, let me back up. Marshall Tucker was not an actual charter member, but he did join the Aurora Club, I think, about a month or two after they got started. And, you know, Marshall and Lois have been longtime members of the Federation. They, I asked Marshall if he could speak. He'd rather not. His health is not as good as it is. You know, Marshall is going to be 96, I believe, in November. Mine is as sharp as a tack, and Lois is also wonderful people. And we interviewed them this past week for their comments about the early years and the early days of the Aurora Club. So we can run that now. That'd be great.
Aurora Club was started. I was there at the beginning in 1943, and I was there when it really began in 1944, January 17th. It was a snowy day. And it was a good thing because we got our blind people together and they seemed to enjoy it. We had 17, as I remember. Dr. Sam Lawton was the starter of this organization, and he came to us and asked us if we wanted to start a program for the blind. He wanted to start a spiritual social club for the blind. The Columbia chapter was started in 1947, and when Donald Capps came into the picture, it was a time when Don was working for Colonial Life and he had office experience. The rest of us didn't have any office experience to be able to really organize unless we were led, more or less. And Don, of course, made a tremendous leader, and he did a whole lot to encourage blind people.
Don Capps and I went to the convention in San Francisco in 1956, and it was really an eye-opener because South Carolina at that time was the cow's tail. We were behind in everything. And it was so exciting to see blind people as mobile as they were and interested in so many things. It was really quite spectacular for us.
Well, in 1957 is when I attended my first convention, which was held in New Orleans. And I had never seen blind people get around so much in my life. I mean, they just knew where they were going, whether they knew or not, I didn't know, but they sure acted like it. And it was an inspiration to me, and I never forgot it. I also remember the piano tuning program that they had, and that was, of course, in my interest too. I enjoyed that. I learned a lot. In 1960, I became president. I didn't want to really be president because I didn't feel like that I was capable of handling the organization like it should be. But we passed four pieces of legislation to be able to aid blind people. In 1964, we held a convention in Charleston. There, the resolution was read to start the Commission for the Blind. It was an extensive resolution and covered a lot of territory.
We used the people in local areas. We all volunteered to take time to talk to senators and representatives. And Marshall pretty much did the upstate. I did Orangeburg and Florence and Chesterfield. We let people work in areas that people knew them. Well, the Federation has done a lot to educate the public to blind people. So we, as members of the Federation, have broadened people's views to blind people and their capabilities. And with the technology now, blind people can do almost anything that a sighted person can do.
Find your niche and do it. Find your talent. And don't let people tell you you can't do it.
That's how this organization was built. It was built on sacrifice.
But it was rewarding. We learned a lot, and we hope that we gave the proper example for other blind people to follow. Ow, she's got braille.
I don't know about you guys, I got choked up there for a second, but you can't have it said much better than that. I did talk to Mr. Capps. Mr. Capps thought it'd be wonderful if Marshall and Lois would take the lead on this, and he recommended that I talk to Marshall and Lois to do the part of the early days. I do want to say one of the other features of the past 75 years, Mr. Capps had a dream of starting a center in Columbia. At that time in 19, well, let David tell you about it, but in the early 60s, it was called the Aurora Center, and it was going to act as the headquarters for the Columbia chapter and also the state headquarters as well. So here to talk about the Federation Center of the Blind and its growth, here is David Houck, the Executive Director of the Federation Center.
Feel like a talk show host. I got bumper music. Now, I wasn't around here in 1961, and I've lived a lot of other places. But I came on 36 years ago in 1983 as the center's director. And a lot has happened since 1961. I think originally the Columbia, the Aurora Club, wanted a place for blind people to meet and to conduct their own business. And that was done by the erecting the center. And that was October 15th, 1961. We're 59 years old now. A lot of history, a lot of things have happened. With our facilities, it seems like once we've got the center built, that everything grew rapidly. By 1970, we doubled the size of the center. And in 1978, we tripled its original size. In 1980, we got a parking lot because it was a little dangerous for people to pull up on Kilburn Road and drop people off and pick them up with all the traffic going down that road. So we got a parking lot in 1980 behind the center. And then in 1988, we secured a little more property from the city of Columbia and were able to put a expand the parking lot to double its size. We since then have had a lot of renovation. In fact, Barry Chavis, who works with us now, has been doing a lot of the renovations, and we've just installed LED lights throughout the center. We've We've done, they can be dimmed. So someone has sensitivity to light, whether it's in the meeting hall, the conference room, in our computer training rooms, things like that, the lights can be dimmed to accommodate that. We also have built a new storage shed, have a electricity run to it, and we have now lighting and electrical in there, so we can run dehumidifiers that you know in South Carolina. If you don't dehumidify things, they'll get moldy after a while. So we're going to make sure that storage shed is in good condition for years to come. Talking about personnel, before I came here in 1983, Suzanne Bridges, known as Susan Bridges Mitchell now, I believe, was the executive director. She was part-time before I came on, and she started, I believe, in 1977. In fact, in the Palmetto Blind in the winter edition, I'm going to publish an article that was published back then, in, I believe, in the Columbia magazine, when she first came on, talking about the things that we were going to do as a Federation Center. And so she was very forward-looking. Also, we've had several administrative assistants working there, and one of which is since I've been here, the Linda Amick, who came in around 1990, just as we were getting computers. And that, believe it or not, before then, I think the biggest technology we had was an Opticon in 1983. We had an IBM computer, about the size of IBM copier that would do 10 whole copies off of a roll of paper on one side only. Compare that with what we can do today. If we wanted letterhead, if we wanted envelopes done, if we wanted things like that, we always had to get them printed. So every time we did elections or added an advisory board member or one fell off, then we'd have to reprint it, and that would cost us money. We do all of that in-house now on our computers, of course. And that saves us thousands of dollars in printing costs. We do an awful lot. I think the only thing we don't do on our computers right now is the Palmetto Blind itself, the print edition. Dorothy Barksdale, you hear Dorothy? Say aye, okay. When I first came here, she was working at the center back in the days before computers, back in the days before electronic brailers. And she used a, what we would do is we would record things that needed to be put into Braille, and she would Braille them and then use the good old thermoform machine. That's one copy at a time, and it takes about 10 seconds to do a copy. Now, if you're doing the Palmetto Blind, you're talking about 88 pages per issue times the number of issues. I mean, it'd be like standing over an ironing board all day. But now we can produce all those things, and we can convert files over and have them printed using the Duxbury Braille translator and our Interpoint Index-D Brailler. Now we have pretty much averaged 25,000 pages of Braille a year. Some of our programs, when I first came on for several years, we had a companionship day where people would gather together and we would have an activity and a luncheon. I think some of the more robust things that we did, we had a trip to the airport, and for those who had never been on a flight before, we were taken up on a flight around Colombia on an airplane. So that was an interesting experience. We went down to Charleston and we had a tour of the Charleston Harbor, and that kind of thing was see all the military ships that were down there. We also had a men's supper once a month where we would have a dinner and then we would sit down and discuss topics that Don and Betty Katz would bring up and tell everyone to say what they thought it meant to them, those kind of things. Well, we've expanded a lot since those days. Oh, and our technology? You know, when I first came there, you know what the big technology was? The Opticon, single character reader. And now imagine what we're doing with technology. Then in the 1990s, as I said, we started getting computers and using them at the center. And even before the mouse was invented, when the word perfect would say that internet was a misspelled word. Yeah, back in those days. You could always tell the new administrative assistants because they would have whiteout on the computer screen. Just kidding. Then we had a, we have the Duxbury Braille translator. We've just upgraded its software. And we use the embosser, as I said before. We have continually had some Braille classes going on. I remember Sheila Compton, who's passed now, was the one who taught me grade two Braille. And a lot of others around the room. She was an instructor in that at the commission for a long time. And then Tracy, you in the room? Yeah, she's been teaching some Braille as well lately. And we've always been teaching Braille at the center. Since 1992, we started doing computer training classes. We had volunteers, Richard Thompson, Chris Danielson, and others that would teach computers in our in a back room. That became our computer lab. And I believe in 1996, we worked with Dr. Nell Carney, who was commissioner at the time, to set up a memorandum of understanding whereby we could train blind people, commission clients, consumers on computer technology. Now we have four computer instructors, all of which are blind, of course, and they teach either at the center or they teach virtually over the internet. And we are steadily increasing the number of people that we're teaching computer technology, now branching out into areas of voiceover access and that. Ed Bible, say hi. He's responsible for a lot of that. He knows all about the, he's worked at the commission, the employment and that, and now he's retired, but he knows how to put these MOUs together and how to expand to what the training, what we do. So all of those things have elapsed, and we're glad to do the things that we're doing. And by the way, Frank Koppel, sure. he's been our board chairman for a long time. Ed Bible's currently our board chairman. And all of you on the board, say hi. Center board. Okay. We're glad to have you, because we're not just the Columbia Chapter Center. We're the hub of operations for Rocky Bottom State Organization, all the chapters and divisions, and a Columbia chapter that meets there, and all the work that we do for the Federation in South Carolina. Thank you.
Dorothy, if you could start making your way up here, please. Next speaker, I got to meet Dorothy Barksdale when I first joined the Columbia chapter back in late 75, early 76, I guess it was. And, again, good friends with that. She and I are about the same age. We're both 29 years of age. So very precocious when we're that back in 75, 76. But anyway, we became good friends. That has been a leader in this organization for many, many, many years and still is. I consider her still a leader in this organization. And I'd like her to talk a little bit about, she joined in the 70s and there's a turning point in this organization, so forth. So, Dorothy.
Ow. She's mighty, mighty, just letting it all hang out. She's a bread. Ow.
Dorothy coming? She is coming.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Now, brick house, I once was, today I'm a brick building. But along with that, I'm still fine. Be quiet, Ike. Mr. Gashel, before I get started, I want you to go back to Utah and tell them they better lick a little stronger because I am increasing my pack $10. That's right. Good morning, everybody. I am Dorothy Barksdale, for those who know me, those who don't. That's who I am. I was born in Lawrence County, grew up in Clinton, went to school in Spartanburg, college in Greenville, and ended up in Columbia. I was recruited by Mr. Capps in April of 1973, and June, be quiet, Tiffany, in June of 1973, I became the first Black American, not African American, I've never been to Africa, first Black American thank you, to join the Aurora Club at the time. Down through the years, and as of June of 2019, I celebrated 46 years of rendering my volunteer service, rendered my service to the blind of the state, and not only to this state, but others. One's Georgia, Mississippi, Tennessee, just to name a few. I've been recruiting people since that time. My first convention was in Baltimore, Maryland, in 1978 at Lord Baltimore. And the rooms were $22 a night. 22. And the bus, I think, was like $20 round trip. Yep. So my experience in Baltimore the first time gave what we asked for. Grits. I'm sorry, ma'am. We don't have grits. Oh, what? We have potatoes. No, thank you. But anyway, today I celebrate my 43rd state convention, and July was my 33rd national convention. I have met lots and lots of people, became very close to them as family members. I have a lot of family members in my local chapter that I'm very, very close to. The Federation has made me grow a lot. I've learned a lot. And like David said, yes, I worked over at the Federation Center using the thermoform machine. And thank God they let me wear shorts. I was all in this room and it was hot. And can you imagine standing up to a thermal machine from 9 o'clock until sometime 3? Whew. Yeah, that's what I said. Then after I did all these pages, I had to put them together. I mean, you're talking about maybe 20-some Braille copies of the Palmetto Blind, or maybe more. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed everything I do, not only for the blind of my state, but other states as well. And out of those 46 years, there have been times that there was not smooth sailing all the way. Obstacles got in my way, but by the grace of God, I stepped over them and kept going because I love this organization, and whatever I can do for it, I will. So I say to those who just joined, you have a long ways to go and a lot to learn. So while you're learning, make sure you learn to love your neighbors as well. And whatever you learn in this organization, share it. Don't be selfish with what you learn. Because, you know, we have leaders of tomorrow. Those leaders of tomorrow are our future leaders of this organization. And we want them to come along and do a better job, not great, but better than what we did. So we can look back and say, if we are still here, some of us, we can say, oh, well, I was holding that position, but they're doing a great job at it. Now, I've served as state secretary for, 25 years and enjoyed every moment of it. Also, I'm presently secretary of the Columbia chapter. I love my chapter. Now, I am going to tell you that I love my chapter. I do. And I have to commend my president for a fantastic job where she has picked our chapter up from the bottom and brought it to the top. And that means a whole lot to the NFB of SC, because we're the largest chapter in the state and we're the largest affiliate in the state. And I say to my chapter members, let's pick up the pieces and keep going with them instead of trying to destroy them. Because if you continue to destroy them, we're gonna be back where we started from. And there is no turning back, no turning back. And like the song said, ain't no stopping us now. So Columbia chapter members, we will not stop. We will not stop doing what we're doing. We are going to the top. And we are going to do our best as a state to have 200 members in Houston next year. So I say to you, if there's a time when somebody's trying to push you under the bus, just let them push you under it, because God is on the other side to pull you out. And when he pull you out, he's going to stand you up and you step forward and do what's right. Thank you.
Thanks, Dorothy. Before I call on our last panelist, I do want to talk for a second about Rocky Bottom. Rocky Bottom is near and dear to me. I've been around long enough to see what we had when we got the property back in the late 70s. This is the 40th anniversary of Rocky Bottom. It was opened with us in 1979. And just to tell everybody a little background and how we got involved with Rocky Bottom and so forth, 1958, Mr. Capps was working for Colonial Life, and he was a claims adjuster for Colonial Life, and he was ruling on a claim. And he saw a claim, and he thought that he could go either way, either rule in favor of his insurance company or rule in favor of the claimant. He thought, to be morally correct, he should rule in favor of the claimant, and he did. The person called him up and said, well, Mr. Capps, you really should have and could have ruled in favor of the insurance company, but you didn't. I'm so appreciative of that. And for that, I think I have a cabin in the Rocky Bottom community, and I would like you and your wife to go up there to spend the weekend up there. Mr. Capps said, well, I really can't do that. I really can't take gifts from customers and so forth. But the gentleman was very persistent, talked to the CEO of Colonial Life and so forth, and the CEO told Mr. Capps, Donald, you do it. So he and Mrs. Capps went up to Rocky Bottom, to that community, and fell in love with the area, with just the quietness and just the beautiful scenery up there and so forth. For a few years in the early 60s, he brought the Columbia chapter there over Labor Day weekend. Rocky Bottom used to be a 4-H camp and was started back in 1920 and had a history. And a matter of fact, Lyndon Baines Johnson in the early 60s did a political speech from there. But it kind of had it gone downhill in the 60s, and the Pickens County closed it down in the late 60s. Well, by the mid 70s or so, Mr. Capps had a burning desire to refigure that property and make it available for the blind to use. So he went before Pickens Council and County Council, worked out where Pickens County Council leased, I believe, about 13 acres of land initially to us, and did that, and we started to build and rebuild and so on. 1980, we refurbished Austinette Cottage. Austinette Cottage was named for a fine gentleman who lived at Myrtle Beach, who had textile mills in North Carolina, and he contributed the first $5,000 to get that building remodeled and renovated. We put a new pool in 1993. We built Oglesby Cottage in 85. And in 91, we built the conference center. And that was kind of cool because at that time, my first wife, Gail, and I were there passing out programs to people. You've never seen so many. There were about over 300 people were crammed in that dining room at Rocky Bond. There were traffic jam coming through the gate. It was unbelievable. Governor Carol Campbell gave the dedicatory speech that day. It was just really awesome to see. In 1999, the Ralph Ellenberg Jr. Lodge was constructed, and which I believe is probably the favorite place for folks to go to at Rocky Bottom. And so we've had a lot of expansion and so forth. The chapel, or the Lawton Chapel, or Lawton Hall, is only the only building that's remaining from the original property at Rocky Bottom. Just a quick funny story about Rocky Bottom. They've been mentioned, Suzanne Bridges Mitchell was executive director of the Federation Center at that time when we purchased the property and so forth. And she was also helping Mr. Capps with work with Rocky Bottom and getting the land leased to us and so forth. At that time, the National Guard was coming up to clear out a lot of the land and the trees and this, that, and the other. And so they were having a celebration for Oglesby Cottage and so forth. And Suzanne had to do some stuff in Columbia. So she hopped on a helicopter with the National Guard. We're going to rent two come up to a Rocky Bottom. Well, the National Guard got lost, could not find Rocky Bottom. Took a blind lady to show them where Rocky Bottom was and where they could land and so forth and so on. So I thought that was kind of cool. But Rocky Bottom is near and dear to us. I'll talk about Rocky Bottom a little bit later in my presidential report. And also this afternoon, we'll hear a report from Rocky Bottom. But it's a place where it's all of ours, and it's a place that lives have been changed there for sure. To wind up this panel this morning is a gentleman who got to know when he was about 12 years old, I guess. He came through the center. I'm going to talk a little bit with him and some other folks when they were so on. He's grown to be on commission board, state president of our organization for 15 years, and so on. Here is Parnell Diggs.
Yeet. Hear ye, the Colts in session, the Colts in session. Now here come the judge, here come the judge.
Here come the judge, here come the judge, here come the judge, now. Here come the judge.
Stop beating that drum, because here come the judge.
Good morning, fellow Federationists. Does anybody need a stretch break? At this point, they want to stand up. Why don't you stand up? Move around a little bit. Put your hands over your head. Kind of flex yourself out a little bit. Can you put your hands together like this? Go like this. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Come on. Wake up. Wake up. Wake up. Wake up. Wake up. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you. Be seated. Thank you. Well, it's great to be back in South Carolina, ladies and gentlemen. It's a delight to be back. Kim and Jordan and I have been participating in the convention thus far and enjoyed the reception last evening and the excellent performance from Sight Unseen. Jim and Jan and others really did an outstanding job last night. And also, those who put the event together, I want to give credit to those individuals as well. Jennifer Baser and her team, the Columbia chapter, outstanding job putting together. I think it might have been the finest reception that we have ever had at one of our conventions. I guess it should be, having been the Diamond Jubilee event. So I want to take just a couple of moments. How many minutes are you going to give me, Frank? Frank says about 5 minutes. So I'll take about 5 minutes to go down memory lane and talk about where we are, where we've come from in South Carolina, and taking just a moment to remember those who have served in the very prestigious office of state president. Now, you know, it's been mentioned thus far that we were established as the Aurora Club of the Blind in 1944, and at that time, It was believed that blind people were so underrepresented in society that Dr. Lawton and others who gathered at the time thought that we needed to have an organization that was truly run by blind people. And so they made sure at that time that we would have such an organization in South Carolina. And so they thought that they would grant the right of voting and holding office to just blind people at the time. We've moved so far forward since that time. In 1944, the National Federation of the Blind itself was still a fledgling organization. And when we joined the National Federation of the Blind in 56, we had just organized our third chapter in 1955, and in 56, we assumed the true character of a statewide organization. I think it's fitting that we come together in our 75th year as an organization in 2019 and extend voting privileges to those of our friends and allies and members who are sighted in the right of holding office as well. So for whatever it's worth, I would join the leadership of the organization in endorsing the amendment that will be before the convention later, which will expand participation in our organization for our sighted members who have been so helpful to us as we've continued to move forward. Our state presidents, though, you're going to recognize the pattern when I give you these names. Don Capps became president of the NFB of South Carolina in 1956. Marshall Tucker, as he mentioned, served as president from 1960 to 1962. Don Capps served as president from 1962 to 66. Lois Bolton Tucker was president from 1966 to 1970. Don Capps from 1970 to 1974. Reba Hancock from 74 to 78. Don Capps from 78 to 82, Bob Bell from 82 to 86. Don Capps then again assumed the presidency in 1986. And about 3 years later or so, the state board and the convention amended the constitution and did away with this thing called term limits. At that time, we had a two-term limit for those who served on the board in South Carolina. And so you'll notice that Dr. Capps, while he was our principal leader, he could only serve two terms consecutively. And so Dr. Capps served from 1986 through 2000, and then he recommended to the convention in 2000 that I be elected president. And I was so honored to have an opportunity to serve with those that I loved and respected from the perspective of the office of the presidency in the NFB of South Carolina. There was a gentleman at that time who today is seated here to my left, who is running our organization now very ably. And at that time, Frank Koppel could have stepped in and been president in 2000. And after Dr. Capps recommended to the convention that I be elected, Kim and I walked outside of the convention hall, and we were about to go to the luncheon, and the first person to come out of the hall and shake my hand that day was this gentleman here to my left, Frank Koppel, who said, "I just want you to know that I'm behind you all the way." He said, "I just want you to know that I'm behind you all the way." And Frank was behind me all the way for 15 years during the time that I held the office. And then he stepped in 2015 and has done an outstanding job. Outer space. But Frank has done a great job in his time as president, and I think his tremendous leadership is reflected here at this Diamond Anniversary Convention. One or two other notes. Dr. Capps and Frank and others have had a lot of respect and really a lot of belief and respect for young people, those who are students, for example. If you're a student today, would you say hi? So there are some students in the room today. When I came into the movement in 1989, I was a college student. I know it's hard to believe that somebody as old as I am could have been in college at one time. But I was 20 years old when I came into the movement, and Dr. Capps and others began to immediately recognize that we had some young people that should be involved in the organization. And efforts were made to build a strong student organization. And they did that. And if you look at the fruits of the labor that occurred during that time, where we are today, you see people here at this convention, like Marty McKenzie, who was a president of the student division at one time and is now in the management at the South Carolina School for the Deaf and the Blind. Shannon Cook, who has a successful career at the Commission for the Blind, was a president of the student division at one time. Dan Fry, Chris Danielson, they're not here at this convention, but they were presidents of the student division at one time. And they've gone on to have very high profile careers in the blindness field. You know, Dr. Capps always wanted to have young people involved in various aspects of the organization, both at the convention, at the state level, at times at the national level, at times during the Washington seminar. I recall being called upon in 1991 when I was at my first Washington seminar to talk about legislation. We were meeting in a congressman's office. I think it was Butler Derrick at the time. And he called on me to talk about the importance of being able to choose your rehabilitation program. And so at that time, I talked about going to one of our NFB facilities and how important it was to be able to expand your opportunities by selecting an appropriate program that would address the needs that you had, as opposed to having me take a back seat or other students take a back seat. He recognized that giving young people positions of responsibility was a crucial component of Federation growth in the time to come. I know Frank's going to give me the hook in just a minute, but I want to just give a hand to Derek Simon, who is a national scholarship winner in 2019. Can we give Derek a hand? One final thing, though, Frank, if I can, just one quick story that going down memory lane that Dr. Capps always loves to tell, and the importance of our chapters in the organization. We had been working on a bill in the early 1980s. That would give blind people the right to serve on juries. And yes, you know, a lot of people try to get out of it. But blind people had always been summarily excused in South Carolina. When they were called for jury duty, they would show up at the courthouse, someone would see them, recognize they were blind, and just summarily dismiss the person from service, which in a way is highly discriminatory. Whether or not you want to do it, you know, there's not a competency issue for blind people. So the NFPFSC began to pursue legislation that would grant blind people the right to serve on a jury, or to put it another way, it would prohibit the state from summarily excluding potential blind jurors. Well, there was one person in the legislature at that time who was opposed to that bill in particular. I'm sure there were others, but one guy in particular had some clout in his capacity as Speaker of the House. That was Bob Shaheen back in the days. He was from Camden, South Carolina. He was opposed to the jury bill. And so Dr. Capps was the kind of guy who would, whenever he saw two people that happened to be blind, in the same spot, he would stop and organize a chapter. He was, I think, Mr. Gashel, I'd have to say, not that I know everything there is to know about the Federation, but certainly Dr. Capps is one of the greatest organizers and recruiters that we've ever had, and I'm talking national. And so he happened to organize the Camden chapter, and there was a lady there named Mrs. Klug. She was a lady who had become blind later in life, and she was at the chapter meeting. And Dr. Capps happened to be talking about various things that the NFBFSC had done to improve the quality of blind people for decades. And at that time, we were in the midst of the battle over this jury bill. And he mentioned Bob Shaheen. And she said, Bobby? Well, I taught Bobby. I was one of his teachers when he was in junior high school. And Dr. Capps said, well, Mrs. Klug, would you come with me to the State House to organize a meeting with Speaker Shaheen? Well, I'd be glad to do that, Donald. So they went to the meeting, and the Speaker of the House walks in, and he sees his former teacher sitting there. And Dr. Capps began the presentation, and he says, and Speaker Shaheen, you've been the one to stand in the way of getting this jury bill passed. We can't do that. It's not right. And Mrs. Klug points her finger at Bobby, says, Bobby, did you do that? Is that true? And he said, yes, ma'am, but I'm not going to do it anymore. And so the bill passed in 1984. You know, I could talk a long time, but I'm not going to do it. I appreciate all the time Frank's given me and the indulgence in giving me that long to speak. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful pleasure to work with all of you and President Koppel and others in this great organization, this huge organization of Work with the Blind. And I look forward to many more years of working together and helping us truly to be able to live the lives we want. Thank you so much.